Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth. The rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Born in the 1940s, We Remember Show, with myself and my excellent national treasure, other elder, Jim Fetzer. And Jim, welcome to the show. And I have to tell you, when I was a kid, one of the most important things my dad taught us was to respect our elders.
That's a figment of a distance. I'll tell you, Maria, I just had my, on 6th December, I had my 75th.
Well, happy birthday to you. And on the 21st, I had my 66th.
Hey.
So I said, all I need is one more six.
Yeah, they're sign of the devil. You know, when the Reagans bought their home out in California, the original address was 666, so they had it changed.
Well, it was fitting for that. Yeah. But, yeah, numbers mean a lot. But, you know, truthfully, I was taught to respect my elders. You know, I came from an Italian family where putting your old parents in a nursing home, that was not even an option. It wasn't even a thought that could breeze through an Italian family's head.
Yeah.
Okay, that meant grandma and grandpa got old. I mean, my grandparents lived one floor above us in a three-story house. And, you know, we were not only slaves to my parents, we were my grandparents' slaves, too. But, I mean, what bigger thrill than to be able to grow up and live with your grandparents in close proximity like that and learn from them and love them. So, you know, respecting elders was always important to me, even as a young person. And I'm so glad that my children, especially my son, has picked up the same fascination with older people, where I always look to older people knowing that they have already experienced what I don't know about. And I would sit at their knee and ask a million questions. But today in our society, you know, they say, you know, you see even on some TV shows where women say, you know, women over 50 are invisible. You know, that people over 50 become invisible. And you don't see that respect. You don't see people going to their elders, which was very tribal back in the day when this country was actually owned by the people that were born and raised here, the Native Americans. Elders were always revered. But in our society, elders have become throwaways that maybe you visit once a year in some horrible nursing home. And we do the same thing with our children. So I guess if you're not right in the middle, you're screwed.
Well, I'm envious of your exchanges with your grandparents. I never knew my grandparents on my mother's side. And on my father's side, her husband was older than she and died before I knew him, I think before I was even born. And they had come from both sets of parents had been fairly prominent in Pasadena, where I was born at Huntington Memorial Hospital. You can see the Rose Bowl from the hospital where I was born. And my mother's father had been, a mayor of Pasadena, and had a electrical powerhouse and a waterworks. His name was Waterhouse, so there was the Waterhouse Powerhouse. On my grandfather's side, my father's side, he had been an attorney and reasonably successful. His wife, who was well-educated in a day when women seldom went to college, was a Christian Science, however, who acquired cancer. And I remember visiting their home on Hill Street with my father when I was quite young. and hearing her in anguish. There was classical music on in the living room where I was seated, and I could hear these cries of anguish because as a Christian Scientist, you wouldn't take anything to reduce the pain. And that was about as much as I knew of my grandmother on my father's side.
Oh, that's pretty sad. Well, you know, I hadn't met my father's parents because they were in Italy. So I didn't get to meet them till I was almost 11 years old. And I don't remember if I mentioned, you know, my father was a barber in those days. And he had his own barber shop, but he had a family of six people. And he wanted to take us to Italy to meet our grandparents before they died. So, I mean, that man busted his ass for years, saving up the $7,000 he needed to take his family to Italy to meet his parents. And it took my father a couple of years to save that money. But we did go, and we spent an entire summer with my grandparents, my other grandparents. And my little grandmother, she couldn't have been more than 4'8", and she was just so endearing. And my grandfather was like 6'4", so they were quite the couple. But, you know, it was such an experience. It was wonderful. And, you know, by the time I was 11 and a half, I had lost all four of my grandparents.
Yes.
But I had enough, I think I was mature enough to remember them. You know, I think it's hard for kids under a certain age to have those kind of memories.
Yeah.
But the love was always there. You know, I know you commented, I posted some of the pictures I took with my daughter and my granddaughter on my week off. And a lot of people really love that. But we have that same connection. You know, me and my granddaughter are the same as I was with my grandmother. That hasn't broken. The chain hasn't broken in our family.
Yeah, that's a wonderful photograph. When I was growing up in Southern California, which, of course, is the pace setter for the rest of the nation, all of my relatives had divorced and remarried. I remember my mother had two brothers and a sister, and the boys were, one of the boys, Jerry, was the oldest, Johnny was the youngest, and then there was Eleanor, my mother, and her sister, Betty. And Jerry, I remember visiting his home where he'd married a woman, I think this was the second, maybe even the third time, who was much older than he, but they both liked to drink. I remember visiting their home, and there would be no food in the refrigerator, but endless boxes of beer bottles.
Right.
I mean, it was quite a distraction.
Well, Italians used to buy their wine by the gallon.
Yeah, my favorite uncle, her younger brother Johnny, and his then wife, Nadine, had several kids, our cousins, of course. And I remember visiting their wonderful home in Arcadia, California, on Santa Anita Drive. And they would eventually divorce, rather to my dismay. And, you know, I maintained cordial relations with them both, but then that was the Southern California way. If you didn't do that, you'd run out of relatives to visit very fast.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, when you look back at how simple things were, in a way, life was so much simpler. You know, I remember I remember the year that the very first grocery store appeared in our neighborhood. You know, up until I was maybe 11 or 12, you had a separate store for every item you wanted to buy. And I know that's hard for people to understand today with all these superstores and giant size stores and whatnot. But if you wanted meat, you went to the butcher. If you wanted fish, you went to the fish market. If you wanted chicken, you went to the chicken market. You know, there was a fruit and vegetable store. Right. And then all of a sudden, this man opens up a store and he calls it a grocery store. And he has everything from toilet paper to sliced cold cuts. That was so phenomenal to everybody in the neighborhood. We could barely believe it. And it was a tiny little store, smaller than today's Circle K. So, you know, back in the day, you got real food, you got fresh food, and food wasn't as bastardized as it is today. So, you know, for people like you and me, we remember a time where it was safe to eat that way.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And today, you know, there are even great efforts to suppress labeling genetically modified food, which is extremely hazardous. I remember a couple of years ago at an academic conference, I was interviewed about genetically modified food, and I gave a rundown on why, from the point of view of evolution, since the consequences of these genetic modifications could be subtle but very significant and wouldn't show up over a lengthy period of time, that it was a very bad idea to put out these genetically modified products because you could not know what interaction they'd have with the human genome. Right. In fact, we know today that Monsanto's genetically modified corn, which has been made insect resistant to derive a larger yield from the field by adding an insecticide gene, in fact, get conveyed into the corn cobs themselves. When corn is fed to rats, it turns out that after 6 months, they become sterile. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if this is part of the worldwide plan to reduce population, I think it's going to work.
I agree. And I think that a lot of that, you know, and I just had this conversation with someone else. I started reading a book about, you know, MK Ultra and the drugs, you know, how they've ruined, you know, the society with drugs, the government's drugs, especially in the 60s with the hippies, with the rock stars. And I thought about it as I'm reading it, and I said, but today they don't have to do that. They're controlling us through the drugs in our food, through the drugs in our water, through the drugs in our air. And maybe that's why people are so passive and so sickly today.
Yes, 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 yes. And, of course, they're doing much less physical activity. You know, television and iPads and iPods and all that are consuming so much attention from children these days that I despair that they're losing, you know, the ability even to play sports together and interact socially, because these are such isolated activities that a person can do without having any interaction with another human.
Well, that's also another step towards transhumanism. You know, people are going to start lining up to have a computer installed under their skin. I have no doubt in my mind that will happen.
Because that's a very disturbing prospect, needless to say.
Of course it is. Absolutely. But, you know, when I look at, you know, and I try to talk to young people wherever I go. You know, yesterday I was at the dentist, and this young girl was there with this absolutely beautiful little baby. She was probably about 3 months old, and the mom was about 20. And her husband or boyfriend was with her. And, you know, you could see they were, you know, socially, economically up against it, like most young couples. But I started talking to her, and she started telling me how allergic her baby is to a lot of the formula out there. And, you know, we started talking even further, and I said to her, you know, you got to be very careful. And I told her there's nothing wrong with using a soy product as long as it's organic. I asked her, what is she going to do about vaccines? I says, you need to really do your homework. And I was very pleasantly surprised that she said they had both decided not to vaccinate their child. She's healthy. They want to build her immune system. They take her out and about. She looked so happy. Jim, she was such a cute little kid. And I was so proud and impressed with these young people because they know more than their parents do. Because their parents are too drugged out to pay attention from American lifestyle.
I read a dreadful story about a healthy six-month-old who was given 13 vaccinations at the same time and died within a week.
Exactly. I saw that too. And, you know, I told them, I said, you know, this is the rise of autism in this country. You know, don't give your child, whatever you do, the MMR shot. And I was amazed that somebody 20 years old could have that conversation with me.
Yes.
And when the woman finally came in, my hygienist came in to call me in to get treated, I turned and I gave the girl some money, okay? I don't generally give money to strangers, but I knew intuitively she could use the money. And the woman that, and she was surprised. She goes, "What are you giving this to me for?" I said, "Buy something nice for the baby." And the woman that came out to get me, my hygienist, she says, "Oh, is that your granddaughter?" Because she saw me giving the money and just assumed that. And I said, "No, but she's somebody's granddaughter."
Yeah.
You know, yes, but at the same time this morning, I sent a donation to Planned Parenthood because women should have a choice, and I support them in whatever their decision is.
Oh, absolutely. I am 100% with you. I mean, the idea that because of differences in belief, one group should try to impose their preference to force a woman to carry the term an unwanted fetus is a form of slavery, reproductive slavery, Maria. It's un-American. It's anti-democratic. How could anyone deny the viability of choice? I mean, that's what America is all about. And they frankly don't understand because they rely on slogans such as that abortion is murder, that there are multiple reasons why that argument won't wash. Mm-hmm. The most obvious being that, according to the Supreme Court, it's not illegal to have an abortion during the first two trimesters or even during the third if it's to preserve the life or health of the mother, which means it can be murder because murder is an activity, the deliberate killing of a person that is illegal. They gloss over the fact that it's perfectly legal and want to maintain that it's immoral, but that involves or requires the deliberate killing of a person. And for reasons that I've elaborated at length in several of my books, including Render Unto Darwin and The Evolution of Intelligence, the developing entity doesn't qualify as a person, which is the first stage in a very complex series of social, ethical, and legal features that entitle it to certain elementary rights, in this case, to the right not to be extinguished or terminated unless there's a conflict with the superior right of the mother in relation to her health or well-being during the third trimester, where we have then a series of graduated rights that go on from there. In fact, the word baby or child is typically only properly applied to the result of a live birth. Right. And just because, say, an individual 18 may be eligible to marry or to join the Marine Corps, for example, doesn't mean that at younger ages, at 6 or 7, they should have that right, or the right to vote, or the right to drive a car. I mean, we have a whole series of stages in the development of persons whereby they become entitled to have those rights. And when you work it backward, the first incipient right to life does not occur until they attain the state of viability, meaning they could survive independent of the intrauterine environment, which occurs at the end of the second trimester. So it seems to me that the anti-abortion movement, which claims to be pro-life but actually appears to be anti-sex, because you get so many of these arguments that claim, well, if you engaged in sex and it led to a conception, then you're responsible as though that could not happen, even having taken all the precautions one could consider reasonable. I mean, they're really anti-sex. I mean,
they're anti-sex for everyone else.
It's bizarre, Maria.
The
pro-lifer, these are people who believe that life begins at conception and ends at birth.
Absolutely.
Because they don't care about the life of other people regardless. I mean, think of the woman who has already too many kids or the family with too limited an income. And one more kid is going to break the bank. One more kid is going to put them over the edge. They even don't understand that it is these unwanted children that typically grow up and become juvenile delinquents, eventually wards of the state. They pursue criminal life because they weren't wanted to begin with.
And they know it. They can always tell. You know, when you said abortion is murder, I thought about Robert Deere, who shot up that Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood a few weeks ago. No one called that, by the way, domestic terrorism. But how does he justify being pro-life by shooting 12 people?
Okay. Oh, I know. It's ridiculous.
And, you know, the way that I shut people down online when they start their crap, you know, abortion is murder, I just simply post this and you might want to use it, okay, because it'll shut them down immediately. I say meat is murder, so that means you're a vegetarian, so congratulations. Okay, now there you are literally murdering a living creature, okay? Whether it's a cow, a pig, or a sheep, or whatever, how come that life isn't sacred? The Bible gives it the same sacredness as it does a human being. It says animals are living souls. So, you know, just say, well, then you must be a vegetarian. Congratulations, because you respect all life.
You're going to be consistent.
Right.
I mean, pro-life.
Right. Otherwise, shut up. You know, otherwise, just shut up. That's my answer. You know, I mean, here's this little girl I met yesterday, and she was happy that she had her baby. She said she and her boyfriend would probably be getting married. So you already can see there's a bit of a strain on their parents trying to help them out. Then I met another girl who used all the precautions, same age, and got pregnant at the most inopportune time. Her boyfriend doesn't want it, so they decided to have an abortion. And I don't see anything right or wrong with either one of those kids' decisions.
Right, correct.
The thing is, it should be your choice. Imagine if they passed laws on what men could and couldn't do with their penis.
Yes.
I mean, when you look at insurance will pay for a penis pump, it'll pay for Viagra, you know, anything necessary for a man, and the same men are the ones who tell women to shut it down. Okay, if you don't want to get pregnant, shut it down, don't have sex. But if we turn the table, if we turn the table on them, you know, and all of a sudden they have to pay for their, you know, penis pumps and Viagra, you know, and that stuff is covered, I can't even believe it, on insurance policies. And women still have to suck wind to get their birth control paid for.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. It has been said that if men could become pregnant, abortion would be our most sacred right.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I was...
I mean, the sexism involved here, the desire to control and dominate women and make decisions for them is just grotesque.
I agree, but it's Sharia law. It's Sharia law come to America. You know, I remember before Roe versus Wade, and I don't know if you've ever had the experience on the male side of the issue, but I remember several of my girlfriends in high school. You know, one girl, we're talking about maybe 1965, so she was maybe 15, 16. She got pregnant. She had to finish her last year in high school pregnant with everybody making fun of her like she was the whore of Babylon. Because she had gotten pregnant out of wedlock, okay? That's what the world was like in 1965. I also remember some of my girlfriends who accidentally got pregnant and had to have a back alley abortion.
Oh, God.
Okay.
And can you imagine how terrifying that would be? And, of course, how often, you know, death would turn because it was not done in the appropriate way for surgery during the sanitary period.
So I know a few girls that actually bled to death after abortion. I knew girls that were taking pills who even knew what were in those pills to try to, you know, have a spontaneous abortion.
Right.
You know, and then when Roe versus Wade came, that was a gift to all women, you know. And now they, you know, you saw, I'm sure you know, that they've passed something like 1,100 anti-abortion laws just since 2010, 400 this year alone of bills, 400 bills, 47 laws. And it's like, you know, we're going to go back to what? Women dying? And what about the men? You know, these women aren't getting pregnant alone. When they put a woman in jail, which I'm sure you saw the post, for having a miscarriage, they said she was guilty of murder because she had a miscarriage. I think that's in Tennessee.
How insane is that? A miscarriage, for crying out loud.
Right.
Which a woman has no control.
Right, but what about the man that got her pregnant? Why isn't he in jail? He's just as responsible. You know, I read an article where a woman chose not to have a cesarean and they want to put her in jail because she wanted to choose how to give birth to her child. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yes.
So I'm thinking that maybe we're going to get to the point where women have to just stop having sex with men just to protect themselves.
I have suggested on programs where I was discussing this that no woman should have sex with any man until he consents, agrees that if she should inadvertently become pregnant, that it will be her decision as to what to do about it.
Absolutely. You did that on my show. We did an excellent show.
Yeah,
and I got to tell you, Jim, I had
otherwise,
so much respect for you because you're one of the very few men, very few that I know, that is brave enough and educated enough to say and take the position you have on a woman's right to choose.
Well, it's so obvious. My mother and her sister suffered various forms of abuse in their society at their time because women weren't respected as individuals, and I think it had a profound effect on me.
Well, I could totally understand.
I believe very much in women's rights and the right to determine how your body is used. I mean, literally, in any other context, I think an argument like this would verge on the insane.
I have to agree. You know, when I was a young woman and first married, the doctors had told me that I couldn't have children. And so there was something wrong with my ovaries or whatnot. And then I got pregnant. And then I had a miscarriage. Okay, I can't even tell you the emotional trauma that I went through having lost what could have been my only chance at having a child.
Sure.
But to think that on top of that anguish, I would go to jail today is insanity. A woman is
literally
suffering enough.
It's literally insane. It's about as stupid a move as anyone could make. And I'm just embarrassed that there's such a significant proportion of the American people who have these primitive, even primeval beliefs. It's bizarre.
Primeval, love it. Primeval is a good way of saying it. Well, you know what ended up happening after that is I did get pregnant. And it was before Roe versus Wade. My daughter was born in 72, and her father didn't want the child. And he tried pretty strongly to abort it himself through physical violence.
Oh, my.
And suggested an abortion, a back alley abortion. And I was determined to have that child. And
well,
I mean,
course,
I got the shit kicked. I got the shit kicked out of me. I went to, you know, his parents' house for Christmas with a black eye. Okay.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, that was, you know, even when it comes to domestic abuse, I mean, these are issues that really touch me personally. I mean, I learned a lot from my first marriage. Trust me. I never took any crap off anybody after that. So, in a way, he was a blessing, if I could say such a thing.
The silver lining, but that's atrocious that you should have had to go through that experience.
Well, you know, it all adds up to who you are, so it makes you who you are, I suppose. But, you know, it took 7 years and a different husband to get pregnant again. And, you know, my second husband, you know, he was thrilled to find out that I got pregnant. And
obviously a better choice.
Well, he was a better choice for a while, but that didn't last either. I guess I wasn't. I was following Liz Taylor's footsteps at that time.
I gotta tell you, I believe in divorce. I mean, you know, if people aren't happy, the whole idea is happiness. That's why I'm so broad-minded about different strokes for different folks.
Exactly.
If a couple that happen to be of the same sex find happiness together,
oh, who cares?
I want them to be able to enjoy that happiness. Life is too short. The hazards are so great. For any couple to come together and find happiness, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And, you know, by the time husband number three came along, it just so happened that I immediately got pregnant. It was too soon. It wasn't healthy for me because my son was just, you know, a few months old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said to my husband, I said, listen, you know, I'll have this baby if you want it. You know, I had a baby with the other two. But he was intelligent and he knew the dangers to me physically And he was adamant that he did not want that child. It was his decision. I made it his decision because I was okay either way. Yeah. But remember, that was 1980.
Yeah, that's very, very draining on your body.
Right. But that was 1980, you know. It was past Roe versus Wade. You know, I was very early in the pregnancy. He came with me to the clinic. I had the abortion. Yeah. And I told my doctor, I said, listen, I've already had two miracles because you told me I couldn't have children. Right. So, we had decided that I would be the one to get fixed. We'll call it get fixed. And even though I was 31, I already decided I was already an environmentalist. And I was like, all right, I got two kids. That's plenty. I got one boy, one girl. Population's out of control. It's time to end the baby making machine. And I've never regretted my decisions because they were my decisions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was to have your tubes tied?
Absolutely. And, it was the best thing. It was the best thing for all of us.
That's what, your case illustrates. It depends on the particular features of a woman's history and her situation in life, mm-hmm. which is why no one else can make these decisions. I mean, after all, requiring women to carry the term is not only be calamitous for their family situation, depending on its particulars, but could even lead to the death of the mother. I mean, it's just absurd, irresponsible, immoral, undemocratic, un-American to force a woman to carry an unwanted fetus to term. Maria, I don't know.
I know, but now, in certain states, they want you to carry that baby, even if the baby is dead inside you. Now, what woman would want to carry a baby knowing it's dead or severely deformed? You know, I had an article yesterday out of Brazil. Brazil has some kind of wild crap happening that so far 2,500 newborns have been born with either shrunken brains or missing brains. So they've actually suggested that women hold off getting pregnant right now till they figure out what's happening to their babies.
I wonder if it could be effects from Fukushima. You know, the radiation contamination has been enormous. The government won't reveal it.
But I think they're trying to say it could have been a mosquito-borne virus or whatever. The bottom line is, imagine those women carrying those babies, okay? I'm a woman. I've carried babies, okay? You have that fear the whole 9 months that something might be wrong with that baby. So the first thing you do, like your mother tells you to do, when they hand you the baby, is count the fingers, count the toes.
Christopher Busby, who's a world-famous student of the relation between cancer and its causes, went to Fallujah in Iraq to determine why they have such a high rate of birth defects, where I think one-third were stillborn, and among the other three-quarters had severe genetic abnormality, no brains, the sort of thing you're describing, extra limbs and so forth, internal organs external to the body. He thought initially it would be from depleted uranium, but he discovered that, in fact, it was from enriched uranium from a new class of weapons that the United States was deploying in Iraq in violation of all kinds of international treaties. What you're describing sounds to me like a highly probable effect of the Fukushima contamination, which went up into the stratosphere and has been distributed all over the world, where radiation counts all over the United States are unbelievably high.
Absolutely.
The government has elevated what's supposed to be an acceptable level because they don't want to admit the devastating consequences of Fukushima.
Right. They want to say, radiation's not dangerous anymore. We're supposed to believe that. But I'm sure you remember. So let's get back to we remember, because I do. So I know you do. Do you remember the thalidomide tragedy in the 60s?
Yeah, sure.
All right, those babies looked as badly deformed as the babies that we see the pictures of in Fallujah, coming out of Iraq.
Yes.
And that was a drug they gave pregnant women that they thought was going to be a good thing. And I remember, even though I was a kid, I was shocked to see some of the photographs. Of course, in those days, you only saw the photographs in the National Enquirer of the babies with fins instead of arms. I mean, their brains outside their heads. I mean, deformities that were off the charts. Yeah. And I have to tell you, Jim, I know there's a lot of mothers out there that can handle that. You know, I don't. I know personally that I could never handle taking care of a child like that.
Yes, I know. I know.
You know, I would go right to let's have a family suicide party. That would be my answer.
When I was earning my PhD, after I put in 4 years in the Marine Corps, I had a girlfriend from Chelsea whose mother had taken that drug, and therefore she was going to be unable to have any children herself. And so, you know, I had a personal connection to that catastrophe, one of many medical maladies that have affected this nation in a rather profound way.
Yeah, that was just too crazy. And, you know, I thought about that, you know, and I mentioned thalidomide when I delivered that on yesterday's news show. But I think that there's a part of their goal is to sterilize everybody. And they're doing it through the food. They're doing it through Gardasil, all these different drugs they want. Oh, let's prevent HPV. Well, yeah, HPV is not that big a deal, and not every woman gets it. You know, you look at the poison in the food. There's no nutrition left in what they call food products. You know, what they're spraying over our heads every day, fluoride in the water, God knows what else. And I just look at it, and, you know, everybody that knows me knows one of my favorite sayings is, the only thing I trust our government to do is kill us all.
Yes. And there was a time when you talk about, you know, what we remember, when we actually had confidence in our government to look after the best interests of the American people and to take measures to protect us from harms.
Right.
And those are, again, figments of a distant past, because we even have reports of the CDC destroying all the records that shows that there is indeed a causal connection between vaccinations and autism.
Right, right.
They destroyed the records.
Well, remember when you actually loved and trusted your doctor? When your doctor actually knew you? You know, I remember doctors making house calls. Nobody had insurance. The doctor came. You could have either given him a couple of bucks. I remember once my grandmother gave him a chicken. I mean, whatever it was. And you knew your doctor, and they treated you. They came to the house. Nobody even needed insurance, okay? Because I still believe insurance is one big racket, okay?
Yes.
But we could trust our medical community. At least we believed we did, because they were still human beings without the pressure of, you know, bureaucracy and everything else.
Yeah.
But today you look at it, and I was reading a poll online that said 1 out of 4 Americans now believes that our government is our worst enemy.
1 in 4 Americans believe that.
Mm-hmm. And they asked, I mean, when they posted it, what do you believe? And I put, I agree 100%.
I know, it's scary, isn't it?
Because they're looking to see if the figure is even higher than that.
I mean, for example, what could be more ridiculous than for the government to try to confiscate our guns? I mean, we're trying to provoke a war with Russia. If and when that happens, and I'm sorry to say it looks to me now more likely than not, Washington and New York will be taken out. The government will collapse. Every community is going to be at its own in coping with marauding gangs who are coming to rape and to loot and to maim. And if you can't defend yourself, you're going to be in deep trouble. We're going to be in a post-nuclear Jericho-type environment where that's television series ought to have been very sobering to a lot of Americans.
I thought that series was excellent. And it was so realistic that you couldn't argue against what could happen. And now I see we're pushing sanctions against Russia. Russia's returning the favor. So I think you're right. You know, even though, listen, I know there's a lot of happy people out there that live somewhere under the rainbow who think saviors are coming for us. And, oh, that could never happen. I agree with you. You know, I just saw a report this morning that China is sending their troops to Syria. Now, I don't know how true that is or not, because it's the first I've seen of it. So, you know, if people can't see we're cresting on World War III while our candidates are arguing over abortion and gay rights, I don't know what it's going to take, because like you and I have said before, it's old hat already to us. I've never seen an election season like this in my life.
Yes.
Jim, let's take a short break. Hold on, and we'll be right back.
You got
Stay
it.
With
you got
us.
It, Marie.
Stay with us, Grandma and Grandpa. I'll be right back.
Does this world get you down? Are you living your bliss? Tired of therapies that don't offer you any real direction or answers? Did you know that Maria does personal life coaching sessions? Save thousands of therapy dollars and get the direction and answers you need to live an authentic life based on your own personal blueprint for this life. All this typically in just one private session with Maria, not countless hours on a couch. Maria combines her professional experience, life experience, and her heredity intuitive gifts to get you back on track. Email Maria today for an appointment at maria@maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A at M-E-R-I-A.net. Get on with the best life you can possibly have. Check out the other side of this happy, loving, passionate woman at www.mariaheller.com and avail yourself of the best coaching around, all in the privacy of your home via the telephone. Gift yourself with yourself. Make an appointment today. Write Maria at maria.net.
Okay, welcome back to Born in the 40s, and we're proud of it. We remember, Jim, when we were kids, we actually had newsmen that we trusted too. I'm thinking Ed Morrow, Walter Cronkite. You know, what did we know? You know, and I thought Ed Morrow was fabulous.
Huntley and Brinkley,
you know, and even if you want to go as far as, you know, Woodward and Bernstein, although
in my mind, the
audience is still out on those two. But when you look at what's passing for media now, look at the harassment you have received getting your book, which is excellent. Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Excellent. Getting your book banned from Amazon. And then this other professor, James Tracy, who they want to fire because he was a contributor to your book. But it was my understanding this man teaches conspiracy theories in school. And of course, with the most phony family of the whole shooting there, the Posners, isn't that the father who was laughing before he did his 10-second, let me get my shit together acting?
That was Robbie Parker, who's also an interesting case. But this Posner thing is fascinating, Maria, because, you know, he's been going to all these websites and claiming what I'm sure is an illegitimate copyright on photographs of Noah, who has the unusual distinction of having died twice, because he's reported to have died not only in Newtown on 14 December 2012, but for the second time in Pakistan on 16 December 2014, which makes his whole case extremely suspicious. Plus, Lenny had over 100 hours conversing with another of the contributors to the book, Kelly Watt, who explained to him how she didn't believe a word he said, didn't think he had a son, much less one who died at Sandy Hook, challenged him to substantiate his claim. And he sent her a copy of a death certificate, which we put in the book, Maria. It turns out to be a fabrication. Notice, if his son is actually dead, he wouldn't have to fake a death certificate. Mm-hmm. I believe that Lenny has gone into a vendetta against James Tracy, who's the very fine professor at Florida Atlantic University, whose areas include investigating the relationship between the media and the covering of conspiracies. Because he, like the other families of the survivors, the purported families of the survivors, have received over $1 million apiece in donations from sympathetic but gullible Americans. Mm-hmm. And he's worried that if the hoax is exposed, that he might have to give it back and could even be prosecuted for fraud. So he instead has been attacking James Tracy to take the heat off himself.
Oh, I don't doubt it. But, you know, when we look, a lot of people, even in other countries, are slamming American media for the way that they're promoting Donald Trump. I mean, even Bernie Sanders is saying the same thing. So the media has played a role in the hypnotic control of the American people since we never got the truth on Kennedy's assassination. Okay.
Right.
Remember how fast they were to call the perpetrator there, and no real investigation happened. So if it wasn't for people like us or you or this James Tracy, you know, no one would have any inkling, and we'd all walk off that cliff together.
Well, believe it or not, I mean, the monstrosity of the lies they perpetrated here are not just the Sandy Hook hoax. The Boston bombing was yet another, the original amateur hour. My next book is on the Boston bombing, mm-hmm. Marie, and just as I had, you know, 13 contributors to the Sandy Hook book, there are going to be quite a few, 10 or more, to the Boston book, and it will be another revelation for the American people. But they're told so much in way of demonizing Muslims, you know. I mean, 9/11 was supposed to have been done by Muslims.
Right.
The Boston bombing was supposed to have been done by Muslims. The Charlie Hebdo attack by Muslims. The San Bernardino attack by Muslims. The Paris attack by Muslims. We're told that ISIS is the creation of bad Muslims. Maria, would you believe ISIS was created by the United States? We have the Defense Intelligence Agency documents that created it mm-hmm. in 2012. We have photos of ISIS members sporting U.S. Army tattoos. We have a video footage that was hacked from the files of an aide to Senator John McCain showing the faking of the beheading videos on a soundstage in Tel Aviv or Hollywood. Mm-hmm. The Iraqi army, this is months ago, shot down two UK cargo planes that were delivering supplies to ISIS, and a week later, Iraqi popular forces shot down an American helicopter doing the same thing. The United States hasn't attacked ISIS because ISIS is us.
Right.
ISIS was made in the USA.
And ISIS has never attacked Israel either. Interesting.
I know. Thank God that Vladimir Putin has entered the fray, changed the situation completely. They're systematically taking out ISIS. He's provided the Syrians with these very sophisticated surface-to-air missiles, the S-300s, notified Obama, and as soon as they learned, the U.S. learned that he had turned on these surface-to-air missiles, we took all of our S-35s, which are the most expensive piece of junk ever made by American arms manufacturers, out of Turkey. But all these supply lines have been taking oil from Syria, stolen oil to Turkey, which then gets it back to Israel. I mean, it's bizarre, Maria. And Obama has made it necessary to drop leaflets on these convoys before Americans can attack to warn them, and then strafe so they can escape before the Americans attack them, because he feels guilty that he created all of this, and now they're going to be taken out.
Right. Well, but how much responsibility or blame can we put on the media? You know, here it was, you know, the holidays just passed, and I was talking to some of my friends about the ridiculousness of the Star Wars movie, to where even the press secretary for the president had stormtroopers on the stage, and Obama, I got to cut this short, I got to go see Star Wars. While real wars, 15 years long, that have drained our country dry, no one is getting any information on the fact. A lot of Americans don't even know we're at war, but everybody's lining up for Star Wars. And I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. It made $1 billion in the first week. And yet our country's at war in multiple places for 15 years. And Americans are clueless. Where's the media on that? How can people not see they're being led by the nose every day?
Oh, I know. The media has been an absolute failure. Thomas Jefferson was once asked if he'd prefer a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, and he said he'd prefer the latter over the former, but he had no idea that the newspapers could become so corrupt and so controlled as they have today. I mean, they are sources of propaganda. In fact, the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948 that precluded the American media from using the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation as are used in foreign countries was nullified by the National Defense Appropriations Act of 2013, so that now all of those same techniques can be used in the United States.
Oh, yeah, that happened under Donald Rumsfeld. But when I try to tell people this, they're clueless, you know, and when we do get attacked, they're going to say, why are they attacking us? Like, you remember Bush after 9/11, they hate us for our freedom and democracy. And then he made sure we had no freedom or democracy.
I know. It's too much.
But, you know, we remember other days, like I've said to you before. You know, when I was a kid, you know, everybody laughed at the National Enquirer, but everybody bought it because it was a curiosity. Today, yeah. Every media outlet is the National Enquirer on hyperspeed.
Well, you're really right, and it's shocking, but it's true. I even enjoy the National Enquirer just to get my mind off of serious events because I'm spending all my time since my retirement doing research on JFK, 9/11, Wellesley, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, San Bernardino, and more, ISIS now included.
Right, and how many seniors can say that? I'm working harder in my retirement than I did when I was teaching.
My wife has made that observation repeatedly, and it's true. It's absolutely stunning.
But what else can we do?
I only have so much time left, Maria, and I want to use it to benefit the American people. If I can help to expose some of the lies that our government has been telling us for all these years, I'm going to do that. I can't think of a better way to spend what is sometimes referred to as our golden years. For me, I'm trying to mine the nuggets of truth that can be found and expose the falsehoods, because we have a government of lies and lying liars, and it's unbelievable the magnitude of the enormity of the deceptions they perpetrated on the American people.
Absolutely, and that's why our founding fathers included the Second Amendment. So when people talk to me about, oh, you know, we need gun control, no, we need to get our government under control, because if only the government and the psycho police force that must be on steroids have guns, they'll kill us all. There's no doubt in my mind. Look how crazy these candidates are. And as much as I, you know, say, okay, Bernie's still the best of the bunch, there's still not a one of them talking about peace. Not one of them. Not one of them talking about the police state. We don't have a peace candidate. I think the last peace candidate was Dennis Kucinich when he wanted to have a Department of Peace installed. And we know what happened to him.
A wonderful person. When they used 9/11 to reorganize the government and create this monster Department of Homeland Security, that was a very bad omen of what the future would hold. And, you know, although there's so much attack on Donald Trump, he's made some remarkable statements. For example, he said about the Middle East that we have no business being there, that we've created only chaos. He wished we had back the $4 to $5 trillion we spent there to put it on roads and buildings.
Right. Well, he's right about that. Right.
And schools and all that. So, you know, I've been impressed. I even think that his temporary ban, if it had only been couched in terms of the region, if he said, I think we need a temporary ban on immigration from the Middle East until we decide what's going on, instead of Muslims, no one would have batted an eye, Maria. Everyone would have said, you know, Trump, you're right. That's a really good idea.
Well, you know, I always like to refer people to Thomas Jefferson, who I think was one of our best presidents, and his views on us sticking our nose in other countries' affairs. He truly believed it was none of our business, and that if they wanted us to teach them democracy, we would have to have them come to us because of the example we were showing the world. And, you know, even when I was in high school, I thought isolationism was a perfect thing. I didn't see anything wrong with it. I said, we have everything we need in this country. You know what I mean? We grow our own food. We make our own stuff. You know, America was booming, and we really didn't need anybody outside. But when you think of the fact that 3/4 of our food comes from overseas now, we're screwed if something happens. You know, it's not like World War II, you know, where we had factories. It would take us 10 years just to rebuild our factories. We would be screwed because of globalism.
And just to squeeze it in as though it were a Christmas or New Year's present, anyone who wants to understand the enormity of the lies and the manipulation of the American people represented by Sandy Hook, You can download the book for free. Maria, you may have it, made it available. It's available on Rents.com, many other sites. Just go online. 425 pages. They faked the shooting of 20 children and 6 adults to instill fear in the parents across this nation, to make us more amenable to political manipulation, to promote their gun control agenda. The classic definition of acts of terrorism is of violence to instill fear into a population, to make it more amenable to manipulation, to support a political agenda. They faked it because it was easier to control the story than actually killing kids, but it was an act of terrorism nonetheless by the Obama administration on the people of the United States.
Well, there you go, Jim. And I will tell my audience this. I have read the entire book, and no one can walk away from reading that book and believe the official story. Jim, thanks so much. I'll talk to you in a few weeks. I guess I'll talk to you next year.
You got it. Happy New Year, Maria.
You too.
To all of our fans.
You too. Take care, Jim. Okay. There you have it. Born in the 40s, we remember a different world, and when I talk to young people about it, their eyes pop out of their heads. So, you know, being an American required, they don't say it's your choice to be an informed citizen. It says it's your duty to be an informed citizen. And as Jefferson said, you know, we probably will need a bloody revolution every 25 years to keep this republic. Well, we're long overdue, my friends. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, supporting the show. See you guys on Thursday when I'm back with the news.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.